Meeting in history, because everybody's version is that the other two guys are doctors. that this was engendered as a result of Hunt and Liddy coming to Colson's office and getting Colson to make a phone call to Magruder, and that E. Mitchell was just not aware that all that happened until Van Shumway brought Liddy into Mitchell's office sometime in June. And that's the first he had knowledge of. Much later in the conversation,
before the discovery,
I don't know. He didn't. You can listen to it. I've got it taped for you. But in any event, much later, I said that the grand jury felt, or the U.S. attorney felt, that they had John McGuire. And he said, well, what possible evidence did they have to feel that way? And I don't see John Mitchell. And I said, well, I understand that one version of the facts is that Magruder brought you a memo with a number of targets on it, and you checked off the targets that you wanted. And he said, why, that nothing could be further from the truth than that.
That was John Deegan's version.
That's right.
What he said, Mitchell.
Right. Then
what Mitchell said to me was that he did not. He said, I checked, I signed off on it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and press the meeting officially. He said, no.
Then I said, they had res esse by Hunt and Liddy having that conversation. And Liddy saying to Hunt, yes, I know how you don't like this, but we have to do it because Mr. Mitchell insists on it. He said, I never saw Liddy for 5 months, from February to June. I never laid eyes on him. He says, I think Liddy is the source of a lot of my problems here. He's using my name. So it's very much of a hardline thing. He said, it's going to be very hard, but he said, I have to think of my reputation. He said, I can't let people get away with this kind of thing. And he said, I'm just going to have to defend myself every way I can. He said, obviously, I can't get a fair trial in the city of Washington by any stretch of the imagination. We'll just have to see how that all comes out. He said, I'm sorry to hear that so much of this is going to come to the White House. He said, certainly not in the president's interest to have all this kind of thing come out. He made a great point of the $350,000. He says that his recollection, and he said, you want to check it, because he said, I'm very vague on the facts of this. But he said, I told him Strong used to work for him, and I told him that Strong has to go back and correct from 350 to 328. Well, he said, that wasn't the only invasion of that money. And I said, oh. And he said, no, you'd have to check with John Dean on this. But he said, it's my recollection that Dean had Strong draw other money out of that fund for payment to these defendants. And I said, well, that's the first I heard of that. I understood that Strong had gone to Bob and said, what about this fund? And Bob just sent it back to the committee. And that Strong had taken it to LaRue as representative of the committee. He said, yes, I think that's the way it all went, but not until some of it had been tapped for the defendants. And I said,
the defendant was not known to anybody over here. It was whoever received it.
I said, was that before the money got to LaRue? And he said, yes, I'm sure it was. And I said, well, who would know about that? Because I've never heard that before. And he said, well, I think Dean would know that. So, 328 is wrong too. Well, if Mitchell was to be believed, that's right, that's the inference. But you don't know of any other withdrawal, do you?
Well, I told you, the 328 was not returned in one trip.
But it all went to LaRue.
That's what I told you. Here's the sequence of it. We wanted to get the money back to the committee. The committee wouldn't take it. Mitchell wouldn't let LaRue take it. I said, give it all back. We desperate for money. Was being desperate for money, took back, I think it was $40,000. That's all they would take. I still say, take it all back, not just sick of it. And made the point that I didn't see what the problem was. If they needed money, if we wanted to get rid of the money, it seemed to me there was a mutual interest in working it out. And that then was what happened. The balance. If they had 40,000 to take the one that then whatever.
Better be clear that you can give it all in one bunch.
Right.
As Strong testified, apparently, he gave a whole bunch of
them. Strong did not.
No, he wasn't asked that. He wasn't asked.
His testimony better is not wrong.
Good.
Now, John kept referring to the phrase. Protecting the rights of people. One of the ways that he used that phrase was in response to my question about what he thought I ought to do with the information that I had collected in the last several weeks. And he said, well, you have to first of all consider the rights of the individual. I said, yes. Same time, here's the president sitting here now with a body of hearsay, it's not absolute knowledge. My inclination is to give it the findings. And he thought about that a while. And he said, yes, I guess that's the best thing you could do. I said, now you should know that the findings just said that if you in any way get the crack in this case, he is going to set aside. And I said, I understand. Andrew Peterson also did it in Delhi. And I said that the Frank Langley is pushing forward as a special prosecutor. John said that would be a great mistake because it would be subversive of the orderly process of justice. If every time you have an important case, you should try to put together an ad hoc process.
Well, I predicted the present prosecutor would go like Delhi.
So I said that these two fellows would step aside. He had a very wry smile on his face. He said, well, great to have friends, isn't it? He said, especially the way we stuck by them. Meaning the ITD business, I assume, the federal language. So that was an interesting little aside. He said, I would be very grateful if you would all kind of keep me posted. And I said, fine. He knew that we were talking to Jackie Rose. I told no decision that I made about a special counsel, but that we were inclined not to appoint a special prosecutor, that you were not inclined to appoint a special counsel. And he thinks it's a good idea to have a special counsel. And he suggested that maybe the special counsel should be the one who would talk to Kleinese rather than somebody in the White House staff. And that was his only reaction to that. I told him again that I thought he ought to be represented. And that Paul O'Brien was now part of this grand jury. And that I thought he really had to think about getting representation. That he gave it a lot of thought, but that he didn't think that he would want to make a change yet. He thought he'd wait to see how O'Brien got along.
Which in part he considers O'Brien to be his attorney.
Right. He asked me how he was involved in what I had heard about the prosecutor's view of Mitchell's involvement in the obstruction of justice. I said that I really have not been able to find anybody who was an efficient actor who really went to a defendant and said, don't talk or so and so. And he said, well, I really wonder if you ever will, other than their lawyers. Because my impression of this is that they were the ones who were worried about their fees and who were really coming to us rather than for any of us going to them. anything about it. He said, I wasn't really worried about what they testified to. I was worried about what they'd say to the press.
No purpose.
particularly like to hear what my family would say about John.
All right. I'm not going to say apparently, but you could say you looked down and looked at the other hand. You remember this investigation on the White House, how many people have been fed, they helped. He says, Ron, those are how many health departments.
Correct.
You didn't get that commander, you will not want to be doing that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, once he tells me that he has to go forward and tell the truth, he has nothing to lose by talking to me.
Well, I know. Why is I want to see it. You want to be without a guy in there, he needs to do at least that on the
right.
Well, his lawyer will be there.
Right.
The other thing is, what about the authority he says something about Trump, and of course, that puts an obligation, has to do something about Trump.
Well, at least to corroborate it or investigate it. If it ends up that way, well, then you have a sort of a dog bone. Now,
I don't think Jeb is, let me put it, let's say this, I don't think Jeb wants to hang strong. I think Jeb is worried about the fact that in going through this, he's willing to, to a degree, implicate strong. That's sort of the same kind of thing as Sean and Jacob, who were both very concerned about getting me into the cigarette event. In other words, they see any mentioning of the name as being a problem.
Yeah.
I don't think Jed sees it or understands the question of whether he really got a strong name or not. And I'm not sure how far he decides he intends to go with strong.
He doesn't say. He doesn't really make it clear.
No. He said, unfortunately, this whole thing's going to come out as it comes out. But then, what's the problem with Jordan? And he said, well, I don't know. That depends on what other people say.
Other people mean like the secretary or someone. Everybody type of them, right?
Maybe. It's intriguing. I see strong cases that, well, the other possibility, of course, would be, they're very likely to have no idea it might be this spot, but they're going to ask
Thank you. think it would put up a pretty good fight.
I would think so. I would be negative. I think that's going to be a damn hard case for approved voting there.
Yes, Dean argues that in a conspiracy such as they're trying to fulfill, they may not have to prove the same kind of animus as some of the participants, but only that they were in it. I would have to read the cases. I just don't know what the law is.
First, you got there with the defendants. I guess
that's right.
I guess the key witness there is not.
Well, it's the defendants, and then it's the defendant's lawyer, Bittman.
They're both hot. Testify tomorrow.
My guess is that a fellow like Bittman has probably negotiated immunity for himself and has.
Strongly good, they would give it.
Yeah, I know.
They will.
Will not. But that he's gonna tell about a lot of conversations he had with a lot of people.
Yeah, we know that.
Well, I don't know that, but I know, for instance, the Bittman had a conversation with Colson. That was a watershed conversation. And I know what Colson says about it, but he was brilliant and adroit. Avoided any.
And he says that his recollection of it would be exactly the same as Colson's. His recollection of the specific conversation, but he says that it may draw conclusions from it. This is a classic conversation, yep. And his conclusion would be probably the president of our conversation.
No.
Is that Colson will have unanswered questions. Because you know what kind of pull I am, that's why I have something to look at. That's what he would imply by saying,
how does Colson handle
that? He says he's got a tape or a wire, a memo or something that says exactly what he said.
Just about. He wrote a memorandum of the conversation immediately after the conversation, which was, that's all that is at this side of the story.
You know, they so this would be an item of
question. The Dean seems to think everybody in the place is going to get it done.
You guys are all doing the same thing. What he said is looking at the worst possible side of the
coin.
If you could make a list of everybody who, in some way, is technically indicted in the cover-up operation, and that list includes, in addition to Mitchell, all of them, Irwin, Coase, Dean, but they all discussed it. John, Kalmbach, Gulenstein, Kalmbach, Storch, LaRue, Martin, O'Brien, Parkinson,
Bittman,
and Starling. And just if you're wondering who the impossible, he said maybe that the proof is for everybody on that list to take a guilty plea and get a immediate
determined that he'd be claiming shadow disorder.
Yeah, Dean's right about that. sometimes I ask Dean's advice on this. He says, Silbert would ask you to wait a minute. He'd step out of the room, he'd come back to get you, and he'd walk you right into the grand jury. He doesn't dare handle a communication like that personally. From the standpoint of the later criticism, he says the better route would be to go to Kleindienst, who will probably step aside and refer you to the dean. The dean, in turn, would say to Henry Peterson, they've done this little investigation over at the White House, they've collected a bunch of hearsay, it doesn't seem to be much new, but they've got it there if anybody wants it. Peterson, in turn, would inform Silbert, who would thank God, I've got more than I can handle for now. We'll wait and interview that guy later.
Purpose
of doing it is to
the White House conduct its investigation and turn it over to the grand jury.
Turn it over to the Justice Department.
Before the indictment.
Right. I think I'd let them drag it out of me in a way. I don't know. I just really haven't thought that part through.
Because they would say, why don't they wait for the Justice Department to do all this?
Did the White House know is probably the way this would come? Yes. We had been at work on this for some time.
President
needed it known.
And I had already had an investigation the night in court.
And that at the time I was ready to report to you my tentative conclusions, and they were no more than that. You felt that they were sufficiently serious you felt that one overriding aspect of the report was that some people evidently were hanging back, feeling that they were somehow doing the president a favor, that the president had to personally transmit to them his view that this ought to be a complete open thing. That may or may not have played some part in General Gruder's subsequent disclosures to the grand jury. In any event, rather than for us simply to hold the information that we did have in the White House, we turned it over to the Justice Department for whatever disposition they wanted to make.
Thank you. see the motive for what it was.
What do you think about that?